Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
On a really serious tip, I'd like to give a shout out to Swenson's, the hamburger chain in Akron.
The Black Keys preferred cheeseburger.
If we're in Akron and we need to eat a cheeseburger, it's going to be from Swenson's. If we need to eat a salad completely covered in cheese, it's going to be from Luigi's.
Absolutely. That's and right. If you want chicken that's fried but not crispy, and sort of filled with grease, you go to Barberton.
Yeah, that's true.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the heart of the heartland, it's time for Keeping It 99.
Welcome to Keeping It 99, your one-stop shop podcast for everything in the world of heavy metal, rock and roll, Northeast Ohio. Sometimes none of that. You know what? I don't think we're going to talk about any of that. Fuck it. I don't even care.
None of it?
Not a single thing.
Because we're going to
talk about Funko Pops the whole fucking time.
No.
Yeah.
Can we talk about this fucking place that I passed on the way over here called Forever and Flip Flops?
Yeah, we can.
And how it fucking made me think about Spatula City.
Oh, dude.
When did Flip Flops stop being thongs? That's what I want to know.
Who the fuck opened a Flip Flop store? It's a store called Forever in Flip Flops.
Forever in Flip Flops.
And they're still open. They've been, I don't know how long they've been open, at least a week.
You know it's a cover. It's a cover for like a drug ring or a sex trafficking.
Nah, that's where the sex trafficking
not,
goes.
It's not, because I've driven by that place and it's right next door to Hella House Coats, which is two doors down, which is two doors down from Walmart. So I mean, nah, that's a good business model right there.
My name is Eagle. I am joined, as always, per use, by the one, the only, my favorite, your favorite, Rubber City Redbeard.
Holler at your beard.
And you heard a voice in
a
the
third.
A third in
another
this
one.
Amazing, illustrious podcast studio. We are joined by Larry Gargis from Persistent Aggressor.
Legendary Larry. As I like to call him, Legendary Larry.
He hasn't made fun of me yet.
Well, Eric, thank you for having me on.
Oh,
hey,
what? Eric.
What?
Yeah, Eric.
Eric. It's Eric. And I do actually like this, but I'm very happy to be here with you, too. I know it sounds all fucking formal and shit, but I'm only... The setup is here. I got you a gift.
No, oh, okay.
I did.
Oh, shit.
Look, I felt bad about that talk I had with Jessica Iboko. And I know that there's more than one reason why you're doing the podcast in your car.
Oh.
And I want to apologize for that right now. So I got you a housewarming gift.
Oh, shit.
Here you go.
Oh,
that's for you.
Oh, yes. Little tree fresheners.
Because we know that you're not only doing podcasts in here.
I'm sleeping here.
I'm not dragging your business out in the fucking street, but... Again, I'm sorry for what I told Jessica.
Yeah, you kind of ruined a lot of things. 16 years of marriage, just bloop.
Right down the tubes.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to be helpful. That backfired this time. So hopefully I'm paying it forward with this.
Those are the best ones.
Those are the best ones.
Next to the Vanilla
Black
Roma.
Black Ice.
I have Vanilla Roma.
Vanilla Roma's my shit.
Yep.
But Black Ice is like,
yeah.
You know,
it's like Norwegian death metal
one,
of air fresheners.
That's the one.
Really, like, it's the Dumu Borgir.
I could wear it as
a air freshener.
That would
match
it?
My outfit.
Dummy Booger.
Dummy
Booger. Yeah, it's Dummy Booger.
I don't know first thing about that band, except that their name's weird.
They're really... I like them.
I seen them once.
I like them.
Back in the Dizay.
They, like, ride on horses and charge over mountains and shit. And...
No, they don't. They play guitars.
Well, they're playing guitars as they're riding on horses.
They're not doing that either.
Have you seen their videos? They are.
I'm sure.
They are
doing
that.
Videos, but...
It's real life. Like, Paul Stanley and the Decline of the Western Civilization, too. It's real.
No,
100% not kayfabe. Real.
I can buy that. I can buy Paul Stanley laying in a bed full of fucking women.
Yeah. He's doing it right now.
Yeah, but I don't buy that whatever that band's
Dumu
name is,
right
around fucking horses.
I'm pretty, man, I'm going to have to, you know what, next time Dummy Booger comes down.
Where are they
down,
from?
Somewhere from in Europe. You know, there's, wherever you talk like this.
like wherever.
They're probably from fucking Wisconsin. Probably and they talk Wisconsin. Like that.
If they're riding, if they're riding horses, they're probably from Kentucky, training for the Triple Crown.
That's a thing in the Americas.
Yeah.
That is famous with horses.
So I made a list. I made a list of questions to ask Larry because I have been so excited.
I mean, persistent aggressive, but not just persistent aggressive.
For this?
Because Larry has been around the block.
Oh yeah, you were in a band called Don Austin.
I love Don Austin.
Yes. I love Don Austin too. Here's the thing. I never told you. I was saving it for this actually. When I first started doing a band, we were trying to book. I think it was up at the Robin Hood, and we were looking for dates. And I think I only played one or one. You can.
No, I was just asking if I did.
Oh, no. I avoided it then because I'd seen you guys a couple times already and they were giving me shows. And I said, that one of the offers, they said, it's one show and Don Austin was listed. And I go, oh, they don't want us. They won't want it. No. I was like, no, because I was very Limp Bizkit-y. I was in a Limp Bizkit-y band.
Yeah.
And I was intimidated by the idea because we had just played with Crowbar and I learned that was a terrible idea for a fucking comedy metal, new metal group to open up for Crowbar. Terrible idea. That did not work well for me at all. And so I was like, okay, like, not every audience is going to like us. And then when they said, the guy from the, I think it was the Robin Hood, he was like, Don Austin, I was like, oh no, they will eat us alive. Like, they will fucking kick us out of that fucking room.
Yeah, I don't know if that would have been true because, I mean, we played with every type of band conceivable back then.
Yeah.
I mean, we played at it wasn't Ron's at the time, it was the Voodoo. We played a lot of those fucking, I don't know if this guy's alive or dead. I really don't give a fuck. We played a lot of those fucking Dan Kogar fucking fucking train wrecks.
Yeah.
Man,
I don't know if this guy's alive or dead. Don't care.
With nine fucking bands that we had nothing in common with, which was absolutely fine if it was limited to three or four bands, because then you can kind of, you know, make shit happen. But you got nine bands and we're the one band sticking out like a sore thumb. It was never fucking fun.
Yeah, that was like...
But, I mean, nah, I don't think that there was any band we would have said no to playing with. We played at the Agora Theater, not the ballroom. Mm-hmm. We played one of those end of summer bashes.
Okay.
We actually co-headlined, which is a really funny fucking story, but I'll let you get to your questions. I can come back to that one later.
Okay, I actually only have one question written down.
Well, then what the fuck, man? Come on.
You more punk rock than me. It's right here. It's written.
I see it.
So I have to.
I see it. Okay, look. You can self-identify as being more punk rock than me if you want. I really don't care.
I'm wearing he's wearing a Slayer shirt.
Isn't it less punk rock to consider yourself more punk rock than another dude who is punk rock?
Mm.
Absolutely. It's kind of like...
I think you kind of fucked yourself.
It's kind of like when people...
With the question.
Maybe I did.
It's kind of like when people who call themselves artists.
Yeah.
For me, I automatically think, well, then you're fucking clearly not an artist if you call yourself that.
Right.
It should just be organic, and if you do something, and then it's up to other people to decide whether you're a fucking artist or not.
Okay.
Not you.
I'm going to go see Michael Graves, the second singer of the Misfits.
Yeah.
This week, right?
You are?
Is that punk rock?
Sure, why not?
Is Michael Graves punk rock?
Yeah, I guess he sang for the Misfits.
Did you consider it the Misfits?
They were playing punk music. I mean, I don't know. It's like it's up for other people to decide. Yep. I'm not the arbiter of what is and isn't punk.
I will tell you this.
I didn't like any of those records. I thought they were awful.
Wow.
Except on the first one they did, I gave them thorough listens too because I don't want to be a shithead about it. But the one track, Walk Among Us, was fucking pretty tight. That was a nice hook, catchy as fuck. And I also appreciated the fact that he wasn't just trying to ape Danzig. Like, you could tell he had the influence, but wasn't trying to sound like Danzig.
They didn't do the...
But, I mean, you know, it was too much of a cash grab.
Is that what it felt like?
To me, it did. And I'm also coming from a situation where when I was first starting to listen to that band, Misfits were already fucking gone by the time I discovered them. And I had all these, like, gatekeepers kind of influencing my taste. I'm always looking backwards. It's just in my nature to look backwards. So anything new comes up, I try not to shit on it because people need to keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. But I'm always looking back and I'm trying to like weigh the scales and I'm just like, yeah, that's not good. Cause I'm looking at what the bar was set fucking high. So they were destined to fail regardless. But I also try to listen to the records and be diplomatic and I just fucking hated them. See, I fucking hated them.
See, I jumped on board with the Michael Graves Misfits before I actually jumped. Cause like it just, I think it was based on like my age. I was like 13.
Yeah.
And so I was a big Metallica fan and I would go watch the old Cliff Burton thing and they always like covered, you know, Last Caress and stuff. And yeah. So I was just like, oh, Misfits. And then American Psycho just hit.
Yeah.
And so that's what I bought. And so to me, that was, I didn't even know Danzig was in the fucking group at that time. Didn't even know.
Look.
And so I just like dove so into it. And then when I found out that Danzig was in it, like, yeah, it was just all.
Look,
that's when I actually started listening to like 80s punk and
all the fucking punk rock bands and hardcore bands that I absolutely fucking love that like inform my opinion of what the world should think, but what I think it is and what I think it should sound like. All by the time I got into those bands were either fucking breaking up or making really bad fucking records. So Chronology is a motherfucker.
Right.
I only caught some really excellent bands at a weird time because I was really young. Getting into shows I probably shouldn't have been going to, and it was just luck.
Right.
So, people's entry points, you can't fucking, I mean, there are fucking nerds out there like, oh, you fucking like that lame-ass version. Like, you know, fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
Somebody's entry point is somebody's fucking entry point. Eat a dick.
I always embrace that kind of attitude when it comes to the stuff that I'm into, because I know I'm into a lot of corny shit. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, I've listened to some awful fucking shit over the years.
But, like, it's just like, no, it's like there was a certain point in my life where this music hit me in a certain way, and then it did. It opened it up a floodgate to better stuff.
Yeah.
And, the things that came before them or the things that were still out around that time. Like, and so it's like, yeah, I do listen to the Insane Clown Posse still because, like, there was a period of my life where that kind of shit.
It resonated with you somehow.
It resonated with me in the aspect of when I first got into them, they weren't a popular thing. The word juggalo wasn't even a fucking thing. Like, people called me the ICP kid. They had, like, maybe two, three albums out at that point. They weren't a big deal. And so in my school, like, you know, you're not going to believe this. I was not the most popular guy. Not the most popular dude. And so I was trying to find a way to, like, you know, find myself and separate myself from these people that I was just like, I hate jock. Like, preppies was a word that I would say all the time. Like, fucking preppies. And so I was like, well, there's two clowns that are rapping, and they have dreadlocks. They're clowns that rap with dreadlocks. Yeah, fuck you guys. And then I would listen to their stuff. They're singing about the same stuff. Like, fuck these guys. And I'm like, yeah, fuck those guys.
And that
so
was the
it
appeal,
just resonated.
That was the appeal to a lot of kids with ICP at that age.
Yeah.
The same fucking thing.
And then
it took off and became its own. Opposite of what I hate now. So I dig it.
So even, like, to me back then, like, I was like, ICP is like punk rock in that regard. Like, they're just so, like, you know, that's how I felt when I was a kid.
Punk in a lot of ways is super specific, in other ways, totally not.
Yeah, right.
It's hard to pin down. But to your point, the one thing I will say about ICP, aside from being astute businessmen who have fucking ownership over everything they do, that's fucking amazing.
That's
like,
crazy.
They own everything lock, stock, and barrel. Their music's garbage. But,
right.
I mean, but fair. Think about it. But that's think fair. About it. It's like, who does that? Fugazi did it. Fugazi, Clutch, and fucking Insane Clown Posse. You know what I mean? They're like running their own thing, and they have this whole, and you know, the weird thing about like outsider music is that, and Insane Clown Posse is a perfect example of this. You feel like you're outside of everything else that people might call mainstream. Kids say normies now or some shit like that.
Yeah, that's the new one.
Yeah, they say that. And yet, when you're drawn to something, there's still that fucking tribal instinct where you're like, I'm drawn to these people. This is my tribe.
Yeah.
And punk rock is that way. Metal is that way. You know, juggalos are that way. By the time I became aware of Insane Clown Posse, people were already saying juggalo.
Right.
So, I mean.
And then you'd be like, what is a juggalo? And you'd see it and you go, oh, no.
I'm not even judging this. And there are people who, like, it's weird. I'll read things in the news every once in a while. about people talking about Juggalos a certain way, and I'm like, well, I mean, they're just fucking kids, man.
Exactly.
You know, and it's just kids being kids and some adults being weirdos, too.
Sure. But some adults being kids.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So I just kind of like, I try not to shit on it because it's just like, you know, people like what they like. But subjectively, my personal taste, if somebody said, do you like, fuck no, that's awful.
Yeah, like, I
get a headache in my eye when I hear it.
I bet that, fair enough.
Air and dirt, fucking magnets, how do they work? And I don't want to talk to a scientist, y'all motherfuckers lying and getting me pissed.
I had a certain view of Juggalos, like, as a whole, right? Up until, and we talked about it on the last podcast, the show at the Outpost last year, when, like, some of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life were at that show.
It was a bunch of people my age just reliving their teen years.
Such a good time with a bunch of people who just wanted to have a good time, and they were there for the music and just for the experience, and that's what it's all about. That's what it was all about for all of us at one point, was that experience and that music and that vibe that you get from all of it. And it was special to everybody. Guys like us who, you know, were in it all the time, going to shows or working clubs or being in bands, I don't think we appreciate it as much as people who just don't have that in their lives. They work jobs all the time, they have kids, and they don't really know anything outside of that box, so that what they do have is still the experience from when they were younger, and they just want to feel a little bit of that. And I don't give a fuck what you're into. If that brings you some kind of happiness in your life and you're not affecting anybody else negatively.
And that's what's important. Like, I give people a lot of shit, and I tease and fucking make fun of people, but I'm not trying to shit on anybody's good time. You know, I mean, the only thing I can say, you know, adjacent to that, is that the problem with, like, outsider music, be it hip-hop, metal, hardcore punk, whatever, and hardcore and punk are the same thing by my definition. We can go into that later. But the problem with it is that it attracts people who are disaffected and feel outside. But the other problem is that it attracts some genuine fucking sociopaths. So that fucking good time you're trying to have could be ruined fucking easily.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Nobody wants that.
Well, I was,
particularly at our age. I'm 46, but that man. Comes I don't down to fucking deal with that nonsense.
Oh, no.
That comes down to individuals, though. You know what I mean? Like, that's – and you can't pigeonhole an entire fucking group.
Nah.
Because you have a fucking psychopath here and there. You're just going to have somebody that's wired wrong that likes the same shit that you do. That's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking about this last night. I was thinking about how 1980s punk was some of, like, the first, like, really kind of progressive-minded, like you see what Henry Rollins was doing, or Jello Biafra. Like, they seemed very progressive, like open-minded people. But then you got your fucking skinheads. And you have, like, there was two different kinds of people, or not just two, but, like, there was all different kinds of people that were going in that scene. And so some people would think of punk, when I first started listening to punk, they're like, you into that Nazi skinhead shit? And yeah. I was like, no. I listen to Black Flag Damage, like, that's...
Well, that whole skinhead scene was, like, it was so fucking adjacent to punk rock in general, because you're talking about... You know, you could go historically back into the 60s where the skinhead fucking thing really began. It's a roots reggae thing out of England where a lot of working class kids were cutting their hair short because they were working fucking factories. Had nothing to do with punk rock, nothing to do with any of that. It was just like these working class kids, you know. And so what happens is in the 80s, you know, these white power organizations, white Aryan resistance and all that shit start realizing that there's a bunch of angry kids here, you know. And... like kids, when you're angry, a lot of anger is misdirected. It's easy to manipulate.
Yep.
And so you start pulling these guys. So the skinhead thing, you know, a lot of that, people like fucking Geraldo didn't help. Because the shows I fucking went to, man, and I'm talking as early as 86, Nazi skinheads got beat fucking down when they came to shows.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they didn't exist in the scene at all. Probably in larger cities, even more so. But, I mean, you know... That sort of shit wasn't a part of my world when I was going to shows. I mean, had I had incidents where I had to fight Nazis? Yeah, I had to knuckle up a couple times. I mean, and I'm not a tough dude at all. I can't fight my own fucking paper bag.
Right.
But, I mean, it wasn't... So I was always kind of, like, you always kind of confused by that because it wasn't part of my world. Right. You know, so, you know.
Yeah, like we talked about this. Like, I know you're a big Pantera fan, but Pantera,
one of your favorite all-time favorite groups.
One of the first shows I ever went to was Pantera, and like you would see just like a lot of different kind of people there, just like there for the metal. But there would be the guy that would take the shirt off and he would show the swastika tattoo,
yeah.
And he would think that this is my home. They got the Confederate flag, and then they got Phil. He's gonna do some drunk rant probably. And it's like, this is my home. But as soon as we would see the fucking swastika, like, you would become best friends with, like, 100 people around you going, we're going to beat the fuck out of this dude. Yeah. Like, there it is. There, like, and it's, you know, same thing. It's like, I'm not a tough guy at all, but I'm like, I'm swinging on this dude. Oh, my God, I'm going to punch a dude right in the
fucking
ear.
It's fucking hard not to want to do that shit, you know. You know, with the whole thing of Pantera is, like, my distaste for their music is just general distaste. And, you know, before I realized he was a habitual line stepper. You know, like, you can forget, you can fucking forgive a guy for his trespasses, because in the sense that I can say, you know what, dude, you're probably not anybody I ever want to fucking hang out with, but you hope people grow and learn from experiences.
Yeah.
But continuously that guy fucking says shit that just ain't fucking right.
Right.
And, you know, I know some people, they can divorce their personal beliefs and their politics from their art, which I can do to some. I can suspend some of it, depending on what it is. But there are certain moral things that I just can't get past. And I just, you know, not only did I not like the band, but then I couldn't get past that shit, which makes it hard for me to listen to the bands I do like that he did. I like that First Down record, but I can't fucking listen to it thinking, this fucking hillbilly. You know, I'm just like, you know, I mean, and Pepper's in the fucking band and shit, you know, and they had some great riffs and stuff, but I can't get past it. And Pantera was easy for me to get past. I never liked them to begin with. Like, that fucking clicking drum, bass drum sound is great players. Don't like the guitar tone, don't like the drum sound.
So what was the first you know, either band or style of music, like, when you first really started getting into it? Because you were saying you were going to shows in the 80s.
It kind of goes back a little bit, like, little known thing, at least probably to you guys, but my favorite kind of music has always been blues, period. End of story. Blues is just the best music on the face of the planet. There'll be never anything better than that. My dad turned me on to early that in, like, 60s R&B, like the Stack stuff and the high record stuff, you know? And all that shit's fucking great. But the first music I took ownership of was Black Sabbath. Black Sabbath and Voivod are still, any given day, that's my favorite band, one of those two. So, like, I started really, like, when I started taking ownership of music, it became like, my dad gifted me a bunch of records, and then when I started really buying my own records and shit at a pretty early age, it was metal, hip-hop, punk, and hardcore. And while I have a distinctive, you know, delineation between all those forms, and I'm pretty rigid about what I think as far as those sounds go, it never prevented me from looking at the other shit, because that's what I wanted to do. But I'm kind of not answering your question, but by the time I was 14, I saw the Cro-Mags with Destruction, fucking German death metal, not death metal, German thrash metal band at the old Peabody's.
14, you saw the Cro-Mags? Wow.
The old Peabody's with the fucking
And I
poles.
saw them with GBH. And then I saw them a few years later when Best Wishes came out at Jackie Lee's in Akron. And that was a great show, because people sleep on Best Wishes. They're like, oh, that's their metal record. John Joseph's not in it. It's a fucking great record. Go back and listen to it. There are two duds, but the rest of the record's tight. But those two shows happened by accident. I had friends who were growing up who were a little bit older than me. And I just started listening to them. I mean, it was like the record had just come out, and they took me to the show. Most terrifying experience as far as shows go ever. It was like... It was like, before they came on stage, they snipped off their bands that said, I'm crazy. Like, they just let them out of the fucking hospital and said, here's some guitars, go play. And there was, like, an earnestness and a seriousness about them that just was like, okay, those are real street people. They're really fucking going for it. And just the desperation of it. And people in that building. And it wasn't like the kickboxing shit that they do now and crowd killing stuff. It was just genuine fucking we're going off. I don't really like that sort of thing, but when you're 14 and filled with testosterone.
Right.
And you're getting thrown around, like passed around like a fucking joint because I was all of like a buck 35, you know, you can't help but get caught up in it, you know. Yeah. People won't know that about the Cro-Mags now because they fucking made fools of themselves through the internet age. But that was the first big hardcore show I went to. And I still wasn't able to. Your question was about me getting into bands?
I can't remember.
Where are you from?
I can't remember.
Can't you remember anything?
I remember the Alamo.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of stuff, but, you know, off top, I had Cro-Mags, Negative Approach, earlier what people probably call proto-punk, but was just punk rock to me, bands like Richard Hell and the Voidoids, Television, Ramones' first two records are fucking earth-shattering in their own way.
Dude, right.
I had two older cousins who were part of, like, the early 80s hardcore era. Like, they're a little bit older than me, so it was through their record collection I discovered punk rock, you know, like Black Flag and Negative Approach and all that. And they were musicians, and when they were in their early 20s, they fucking skated Akron, went to San Francisco, and were fucking playing in power pop bands and shit like that.
Oh shit.
Which was great, and it made me think, oh well, put the seed in my head, well, maybe I want to be in a band. But it wasn't until I saw Hyper as Hell. Who are a local band. A lot of these guys, mostly they're Stowe, Kent, Akron-ish area. Mm-hmm. They were the first band that I said, okay, I can be in a band. Because while all those punk bands are, there's a lot of talk like, oh, there's no separation between the crowd and the people. You know, Black Flag's from fucking L.A., man. Right? Ramones are from fucking New York.
Yeah.
Well, it's not relatable in any way, shape, or form until you see your not quite peers, but people you can actually see at clubs, at shows, mm-hmm. playing. So Hyper as Hell and False Hope, two local bands, late 80s, that were just fucking amazing and just that they made me want to be in a band.
So when did you first go for it? When did you...
1990.
1990? You had your first show?
No, my first show was 91. It was in the spring, and it was a band called Splinter. We did a few records. And it was me and some friends that were going to Copley. Our guitar player at the time was barely 15. We bullied him into selling his bass and buying a guitar because we didn't need a bass player. And so we did a demo, and then we sent out to this label called Smorgasbord, which at the time was adjacent to like the Youth of Today's and the Judge and the Gorilla Biscuits, that whole New York straight edge thing. They were putting out bands like Wide Awake and Conviction and stuff. And we weren't a straight edge band, but you know, I liked the records that they were putting out. So I sent them a demo, and dude contacted me, and the 7-inch came out in 92. We did an LP right after that.
And how crazy is that? How old were you?
First run.
I was 18, 19. The band was over by 94. And then I started the Unholy Three with Clint, like, right away almost. Because Clint put out a posthumous Splinter thing. Splinter did 3 7-inches, an LP, and a couple comps. One of the comps was... I only mention this because people are aware of Dark Empire, because Dwight from Integrity did it. He put us on one of the comps, and we did that. And there were no shows that I was aware of going on in Akron at the time, because, you know, Hyper, Cell, and False Hope were kind of done. False Hope is a Cleveland band, and there wasn't much going on in Akron except for Ron's Crossroads, and all the bands were like Fox and Kid Wicked and hair metal cover bands. So Cleveland was closed to us because we weren't down with the Clevo thing. Like, yeah. We weren't down with those guys. So we did our first couple shows in basements here in Akron off campus, and then we started doing shows at the Canton Y. And we played there almost exclusively for our entire existence, you know. And there are a lot of people I met that are in bands now with me. So we did that, and then the Unholy Three, and then Don Austin.
guys made such a name for yourselves around the scene at that time, to where like other musicians that I would know, like they would always put you guys over. And still to this day, people, I saw Wall
Creeper.
I don't know
about that.
Well,
I don't know musicians, anybody really remembers that band too much, honestly.
Well,
musician wise.
I mean, I'm talking
musician.
I'm too close to it to really know.
Oh, so, musician wise, around Akron, so dude, like, in the metal scene, like a lot of people knew who the fuck Don.
This is a true story. We saw Wall Creeper up at the Annabelle's. They were playing upstairs. It was the night that somebody threw a beer at my throat.
That was a funny story.
And I'm standing by Jeff Fall, singer of Foul Spirits, Hate Theory,
Pillow Humpers,
Rue, Burn Blue Sky. Like Jeff Fall. Jeff Fall is one of my favorite singers ever. He was like one of the first local musicians that I ever saw.
He's fucking great. Like, I'm so jealous of that guy's voice. It's ridiculous.
He's standing right by me, and I hear him tell his one friend. He's like, "This band is like Don Austin," and I was just like, "Yeah." I was like, "That's it." I was like, "That's the connection." I was just based on like just the intensity, the intensity level.
I had seen a lot of shows, but like Don Austin was like the first band that. The word raw struck a nerve with me, right? Like, I never knew what it was to see a band that was just so raw. But that was Don Austin, dude. It was very stripped down, to the point, 2.5 minute fucking, I'm getting my point across, in your face.
The songs weren't even 2.5 minutes.
That's what I'm saying.
I love that.
Those were your ballads, were the 2.5 minute ones. But that's what it was. Like, it was the first band ever in my life that I got what raw meant.
It kind of came from the idea that, like, when Splinter broke up, because Splinter was really contemporary as far as, like, there are a lot of peers, like, we were in the same peer group as bands like Integrity and Ringworm and all those guys, and we weren't too dissimilar from them in that, although we were playing hardcore, by the way, I feel hardcore is defined, which is basically just an adjunct to punk rock. We were listening to so much Sepultura and Celtic Frost that it was totally coming through with we'd like really strong metal leanings. So when the band broke up, Clint and I conspired. I said, I want to do a hardcore band the way they used to do it in the early 80s, which is really fucking self-indulgent at that time, because by the mid-90s, every band sounded like fucking Earth Crisis. Every band, we were almost to the fucking, you know, Shadows Fall era of metalcore, and we're like, fuck all that. I love metal, but I did not want to be in a metal band anymore. I was done with it. Mm-hmm. So I said to Clint, we're going to write 3-chord songs and play them as fast as fucking possible. So, you know, Unholy Three started, and Clint's brother Chris was our bass player. And then Josh Cosner, who plays guitar in Persistent Aggressor now, was our guitar player. And we had this great drummer named Joe Melnick. And we did a 7-inch and an LP, went on tour, broke up on tour, came back. And, you know, within 6 months, I called Clint. I said, do you want to do another band? And it became... And you know
how that first one worked out really well for us?
Well, it was just, you know, because we broke up on tour. Because I said to guys, I don't want this to end the way Splinter did. I want us to be friends. Let's just be fucking done, because this is not working. And so we get back, and we had two guys, Jim and Joe McAroli, who was in Splinter. We did the first Don Austin 7-inch, and then they bailed. After a couple shows. And Clint and I were like, well, what are we going to do? So he called his brother up, who was in Unholy Three, and Chris goes, I'll do it, but I'm playing second guitar. Okay, fine. So then he calls up Sean Spindler, because Chris knew Spindler. Spindler was in fucking Dead Body Chuckers, who were fucking the best death metal band in town.
I love those
They
guys.
Were so fucking good. He played in them. He played in a couple other things. Oh, he was in Dahmer, the original Dahmer, not the one from Canada, the one from here. They were fucking sweet. Anyway, so we got Sean, and then Chris jokingly said to me, because wouldn't it be great if Josh was in town? Because Josh had moved off to Dayton. So that'd be funny as hell. 2 weeks later, Chris goes, talk to Josh, he's playing bass. So it was the same fucking lineup as Unholy Three, except a different drummer. And we just kind of sort of continued on that path. And then eventually, you know, we changed up lineups because Josh went to law school and Mike Stangelo joined. And, you know, we were doing that whole thing. We were playing as many shows as we could at Lime Spider and Annabelle's. And half of it was just us having fun. We were just trying to play. We were trying to emulate the bands that we grew up listening to, poorly. I mean, but as far as it being raw, it's because we just kind of like, I don't want to say we didn't give a fuck at all. We wanted to be tight. We wanted to be fast. We wanted to play 10 songs and then take a break.
Yeah.
You know? But what we were putting out there, we tried to just put ourselves out there as much as we could. And that raw sound you're talking about, it's because Clint had a shitty fucking guitar. That's part of it.
Yeah.
He had a mock Steinberger. It wasn't even a real Steinberger. Do you know what a Steinberger is? It's one of those 80s guitars with no head top.
No
and it
head,
looks like a
no
box.
Head, very small. Look, I have a picture.
Looks like
right
a
here.
Cigar box.
You have a picture,
I have
right,
a picture
here.
All the new. This is like one of the like Clint. Like if you ever like got to hang out with Clint, he's such a quiet, cool dude. Can drink his fucking ass off. But yeah, he played this little dude.
And so it wasn't even a real one.
Oh, right, okay.
That's the guitar he played. It wasn't even a real one. And at one point during a show, he's like just smashing on his strings, destroyed one of his pickups. Oh, so he's going to get his pickup fixed. No, you know what he does? He takes the fucking pickups out and then takes this little stuffed animal. It's a monkey. Stuffs it in where the pickups were and then adheres this plastic thing over where the pickups are supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So it's this monkey where he's strumming, and he's only got one set of pickups. The guitars sound like fucking garbage. And we kept telling him, he has beautiful guitars at home. Bring your good guitar. He's like, nope. Fuck you guys. I'm not bringing my good shit.
I miss that dude, man.
I know I'm totally rambling. I just, you know, cool. But... I don't get to talk about this stuff often, except for with the guys in Persistent Aggressor, and they get annoyed pretty easily.
And you guys practiced down at the practice spot, right?
Yeah, actually, Pillow Humpers. We shared a room with them at first,
right?
And then we got a room called it Area 4, and Rue was in that room with us, and Sofa King, and Fistula, and at least a dozen other bands at one time. I mean, the whole scene at one point was pretty much coming out of that building.
Yeah. It's the old Cotter building in downtown Akron. We used to call it the practice spot.
Was that the place you took me when we first started?
Yes, that was
the
place. That was when me and you very first met, and we talked in the gas station that one night.
Yeah.
And then Burns was like, no.
Yeah.
He's got a new band.
I know.
I'm excited. Him and Fall and fucking Jeff and Chris from Sofa King is actually playing bass instead of guitar.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, and Contra, right? Chris is in Contra.
No, Contra doesn't exist, I don't think.
Well, I mean, they did.
He was in Contra.
I saw Aaron and Adam were at the show on Saturday, and they have a band. They had a cover band called Leonard Skin Flute, and they were doing Skinner covers for a while just for shits and giggles.
Yeah.
But I think the other two Contra dudes got something going, too. So...
Yeah, I heard Burns was with doing stuff with Fall again. Fall told me that, and
that's
a super exciting thing for me because I hated the fact that Burns got away from all of it.
Yeah. He needed to, I think. And I think just for
maybe.
His own.
And you know, if that's what
take
he needed
a break,
to do,
man.
Cool, awesome. I just hated that he stopped fucking jamming because Burns writes really good fucking riffs, you know, and he's a fucking cool dude. So when I found out him and Fall were back together, I was like, oh, this is... There's no way it's not going to be good. It's going to be good.
I don't know if I really want to put Burns over after he didn't let me, you know, practice at that...
Practice spot?
Yeah. He didn't like me.
He did not want some crush groove in there.
He did not want my fucking...
Awesome. Oh, for real?
Yeah.
That's fucking...
The first time I ever met him, like, Grant took me there.
Your money was green, right?
Yeah. And but
what's the fucking problem?
But Burns, first thing he says to me, he's like, you smoke weed? And I was just like, yeah. And he's like, because you got to smoke weed if you're going to be around here. And I was like, okay, cool. And I had my ICP shirt and my orange spiky hair. And for some reason, he did not want me to be a part of that little scene.
He didn't.
I didn't get it.
I fought for
it. I thought.
That was a very
you
Burns.
Did.
I put up a fight for you.
That Grant, was a very Burns thing to say.
Grant had my back. So you know what? I don't know if I'm going to put over Burns' new shit.
That was a very Burns thing to say.
Yeah.
I'll do it for Jeff.
Yeah, totally.
I'll do it for Jeff.
Yeah. Foul Spirits is a band I like a lot, too.
Ooh, so good.
That's good. And that's such a good name. That's a great name for a fucking band. I always struggle with band names. That one's fucking great.
But to say that, like, you guys didn't give a fuck.
I mean, we did. We
right,
wanted
but,
to play well, but we just kind of didn't care
for a
at
guy,
the same time.
For a guy in any band to, like, really get that across to people, if you want that to kind of be your image or your message, like, don't give a fuck, Spindler was the guy to have in your band.
Sean was a fucking wild card, man. The first night we hung out with him after our first practice when we realized we were going to work, he and Josh and I went out and we're sitting at Annabelle's. And Sean's like, and, you know, he would probably hate me telling this fucking story now, but he's like looking at dudes like, yeah, fuck this motherfucker. I'm about to smoke him. And I'm like, come on, dude. And Josh is like, because Josh's time was a little more nervous, a little more tense. And he turned to me and goes, is this guy going to be okay in our band? I'm like, he's going to be fine. Trust me, he'll be fine. He's perfect. You know.
The first time I met Spindler was at the Dead Body Chucker's house. And I don't even know whose house that was. I don't know if it was Jason Lutz or if it was like Derek's house.
You know Jason Lutz and John Patrick and I went to kindergarten together?
Did you really?
Yep.
Dude, John Patrick's my homie. And I haven't seen Lutz in forever, but he's one of my homies too. But yeah, John Patrick's a good dude.
Yeah. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But that's when I met them, was at that house that was down on Manchester Road over in Kenmore. And it's like the first thing, these guys don't know me from fucking Adam, and my boy James Maharis brought me over there. And I walk in, and I'm a horrible fucking drummer, right? But I fucking love drums. So when I walk in and fucking introduce me and shit, like, I eventually, like, I don't even know Sean, dude, and I sat down on his kit, and he just bought these fucking brand new Axis pedals and shit, dude. I started playing, and he was just like, what the fuck? What? Like, so the first thing I did when I met Sean Spindler was pissed him off in the absolute wrong way that you possibly could. But he loves me. I love him.
Like I said, he was always the wild card, but there was one night where he actually had to calm me down from fucking killing a guy for...
Oh, you know you're off the fucking rails if Sean's calming you down.
Yeah, I was really... I won't go into the story, but I was really fucking mad. And Sean goes, hey, you need to sell it. So he got all fucking dad with me. And my son was like 4 at the time. He's talked me like, he's like, I need your looking eyes and your listening ears. You know, just, he didn't say that, but that's what it felt like.
Right.
You know, I'm like, all right, dude. You know, he's, you know.
That's when you know you have a problem.
Yeah. He was a great drummer, a great dude, and just, you know. Band came to an end when he went to L.A.
Yeah, that sucked so bad.
It was done. We were done.
Yeah?
I mean, we weren't. There were no drama or anything, man. It was time. We were banned for 7 fucking years, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's a run.
From 99 to 2006, that's a long time.
Before we get into the persistent aggressive stuff, it's a thing of legend. You're a thing of legend on this podcast for the past probably year and a half, 2 years since the story.
It's fucking
first
embarrassing,
was
by the way.
The final Don Austin show.
Yeah.
I was hoping that his answer to the, are you more punk rock than me, was going to be this. Did you break your fucking neck?
Did you almost die while playing a show?
Your band's last show.
I didn't break my neck, but I did almost die at the show.
I mean, you ended up with a fucking halo on your shit.
Well, they had to stabilize my head because they didn't know whether
you were going to die.
At the time.
They had to drill holes in your skull.
No, look. So Sean was leaving town. We were all drinking, but he's been banned for 7 years. And it was our last show. And we were playing late, and we started drinking real early. And Lime Spider, I love Annabelle's, but Lime Spider was that band's home.
Yeah.
You know, and Danny was always fucking hooking us up. So we're playing, we played through our set. I puked on stage a few times, and I thought we were done. I got off stage, went back, stands like this, we're doing one more song. I go up and I look at Sean, I'm like, what song are we playing? And he starts talking to me and counting off. It was complete blackout from that point on because I was blackout drunk, you know. And as an aside that's important to this, as violent as my music sounds, I've never been one for slam dancing or stage diving. When I was much younger, yeah. Mm. But later on, I was of the opinion like, yeah, I'm not the soundtrack to your fist fight, dude. It's like, do you go to Jean-Claude Van Damme movies and karate kick people halfway through the movie? No, then don't do it to my band. But a little bit of jostling, a little bit of movement is fine, but people just get overboard. So I've always been kind of weird about it. So I don't participate in it ever.
Right.
Video evidence after the fact, we were playing our Devo cover, and I was on the monitor, and I jumped and flipped and landed on the back of my head. And I got carried off to stretchers in the hospital for like four and a half days, and they were talking about drilling in my skull because I had a concussion, but my brain had hit my sinus cavity up here. I had 3 centimeters of standing blood in my brain pan. And holy so shit. I couldn't walk for like a month, not because I couldn't feel anything, but because I couldn't, my equilibrium was fucked up. Like I would just fall over. I couldn't, beyond being in a prone position, I couldn't do anything.
You concussed yourself into vertigo.
Pretty much. I mean, but I had all that blood and they were like debating whether they're going to drill in to get, drain the blood or because that stuff sort of reabsorbs or dries up or whatever. And they ended up not doing that because they didn't want to get too invasive. They sent me home and I was just laid up for a fucking month. And at the time that I did it, I guess the guys in the band didn't know that it really hurt myself because I didn't see it. So a lot of people were like Clint and Chris were just like laughing. They didn't see me hit my head. And, you know, there are some people say, oh, I heard a thud. And I don't know. I hear stories from Bobby Walters was in the ER with me and shit. I hear funny stories, that fact. But so part of me says, you know, my son was young. He was 3, almost 4. And I was in my 30s, and, like, I just think, man, that's the dumbest fucking thing you've ever done. I mean, granted, I wasn't in my right mind when I did it, but it's just stupid, right?
That one got away from you.
But then there's part of me that's says, fine. Part of me says, the 14-year-old that was at that Cro-Mag show says, dude, that was your last show. You almost died. Nobody's right. going to fucking top that.
Nobody's going to top that.
I'm 46, and I say it sometimes, but I still realize how stupid that comment is. Because, like, I could have died.
Yeah.
You know, they were, Bobby and Nikki and all them who were in the ER, like, doctors come asking for your next of kin. They had to go get my brother from Kenmore.
Holy shit.
And, you know, so it was kind of scary. And, you know, there are times where I lose time sometimes. Like, I'll just lose, like, a half hour here or there because I just don't fucking remember shit. You know, it's been some lasting fucking shit.
I left right before that happened.
But it was
last song.
It was a killer show from what I'm told.
It was a good show. It was a good show.
You know.
And I left right before you guys played that song. And
I wasn't going to tell that story because Josh gives me shit, but you guys asked. So.
For like ever, that from that point on, that was like the show that taught me you don't leave shows early.
Because somebody might die.
You're going to miss some shit.
So I scaled it back quite a bit after that gig.
So after Don and Austin disbanded, is Persistent Aggressor like the first band that you came back in, or did you just jump straight
I immediately straight no, in? I immediately went to, I was in a band called Hatchet Job for another 7 years. And those are some friends of mine who used to play with Don Austin. They were in a band called Interfuse, and Brad Thorley played drums for a hot second in a band.
Good old Brad.
But I was at, I was drinking with Matt and Mike at the time who were headshot with me, and I said, well, I really want to do another band. They said, what do you want to do? I said, well, I can't do another band like Don Austin. I kind of did that twice. He said, what do you have in mind? I said, let's rip off the Stooges and Laughing Hyenas. So we did that for about 7 years. We played like maybe a handful of shows. We have an LP in the can that never came out. And that band was a good fucking band. My vocals, kind of dicey. It's not my wheelhouse. Yeah. Not my wheelhouse at all, but I'm glad I did it because it taught me a lot of things that I use in Persistent Aggressor now, like as far as what I can and can't do physically. Because before I was just sort of winging it. Now I can sort of figure it out. I'm not saying I have technique or anything now. It's a bunch of horse shit. But I mean, I know myself better. And those guys, just fucking playing with them was fun because they were so good. They were so good. Those guys were great musicians. And those songs were fucking bluesy as fuck, but heavy and fucking nasty and mean. I mean, go listen to Laughing Hyenas, and that's the closest approximation to what we were doing.
Right on.
Now, so I did that band, and then I got asked to join Contra and played a handful of shows. Didn't know they had an LP recorded. Big Metal, our guitar player right now, had recorded the LP.
Mm-hmm.
And they were an instrumental band prior to that. I went and did some vocals. That was a great band. Those guys are great players. But it was just, again, not my wheelhouse. I'm not suited for that sort of thing. Like, some dudes think that they can sing. Some dudes think they can do this and that. I know what I can do marginally well versus what I can't do at all.
Right.
So, and that sort of, you know, that band had a lot of hiccups, and I just sort of bailed out on that. Called Josh up. He's living in Columbus. I said, I got all these songs. I know you got some songs. We started Persistent Aggressor.
So it was you and Josh.
started the groove.
Yeah, Big Metal came in weeks after because Big Metal had come down to my house. We had a barbecue and we were hanging out. And Dave played in a really truncated version of Splinter a long time ago, but I've known him since that long. He played bass. He was in a band called Ascension, and then he was in Soulless, the death metal band Soulless. Okay. And he's got his own studio up there, Bad Back. He's done stuff for Ringworm, Brain Tentacles, Gluttons, Punching Moses. He's recorded a ton of stuff. And he's the drummer for Deathcrawl. He's fucking one of the best musicians I know. And I said, David, hey, Josh and I got this thing. Can I send you some demos? Because we were sending demos of each other to each other through Dropbox. And I shared them all with Dave. And Dave goes, I think I can do something with this. So
we had
the LP written in a really substantive form pretty early on. And at the time, Frank from Feds was playing drums for us. And he had to bow out because his schedule was just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave then brought Mikey and John from Axioma and Six Kills and Nine and Childbite on for drums. And we demoed. We did first demo Frank, a second demo, which is the one everybody saw. And then we started recording LP. And we had to do it in a lot large pieces because Josh was coming up from Columbus. And John did all the drums like in a week, which is astonishing. He's so good.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal.
He's kind of, even though Dave and Josh and I wrote the bulk of the music, John's kind of the linchpin because a lot of that stuff, it would work with another drummer, but not nearly as well.
Right.
John's fucking astonishing. He'd fucking be embarrassed hearing me talk about him, but I can't say enough good things about him.
Yeah, he's got some tricks. Like, when I listen to the Persistent Aggressor album, where it's like, when you listen, because would you classify your guys' stuff as, like, hardcore?
Here's the thing, by my narrow definition, no.
No?
No, not at all. I mean, but I know when I'm writing my tunes, you can tell my songs from everybody else's, because they're three chords, they're fast. The only courtesy I give towards metal is I love metal guitar tones, and that comes from like Discharge and then later on Entombed. So there's like that. I've always liked the thicker guitar tone, but my songs, if you give it a janglier sounding guitar and put more of a rumpy tumpy backbeat to it, they're fucking punk rock songs.
Right
now Dave and Josh sort of skirt the line a bit, so I'd probably say we're more of a metal band, but I always just say heavy hardcore because that's how I'm writing.
Heavy hardcore work, yeah. I would go with that.
I always say hardcore punk, but yeah, I don't. I'm not from.
I mean, that. if we're picking and choosing, yeah. You don't have to pick and choose. You can just like the band, but I just know that the moment hardcore in my, I've read it and I say this a million times. It's hardcore punk, right? That's the genre, okay? So, by definition for me, a hardcore band is only a hardcore band that if you slow it down a half a beat, it should sound like a punk rock band. The moment you start doing fretboard gymnastics and shit, that's metal. And that's not a judgment. I love metal. Fucking, for fuck's sake. Sabbath and Voivod are my two favorite bands. Right, fucking metal is awesome. Right. But, like I said a while ago, I have real sort of rigid definitions, which ultimately don't mean anything. But as descriptors, I'll say, yeah, it's a metal band. Whereas nowadays, a lot of kids that listen to more of the current hardcore bands, they'll call bands that are hardcore bands. And I'm like, that sounds like fucking Obituary, And I'm like, and they can self-identify however they want. I'm not trying to shit on them. I'm just saying, okay, we skirt the line much in the same way early COC did when you listen to Animosity or The Accused. Early Accused, those are they used to call it crossover in the 80s, which I didn't necessarily buy into. It was like more of a marketing thing, kind of like grunge was a marketing thing.
Yeah,
but those bands really kind of confused the idea of hardcore and punk a little bit, and hopefully that's what we're doing. But I mean, I don't know.
You can honestly say
you guys
there's elements, because you can tell that it's like you have a drummer that can solidly play death metal shit. Like, he has little tricks and little fills that he puts in on that record that I'm like, you don't hear that from most like hardcore punk drummers. Like, it's just like, oh, this dude is on a different level. And then you have the guitar solos. You have guitar solos in some of the songs.
Big metal solos are metal.
Yeah.
like I've seen you guys a handful of times now. When Big Metal's pulling out the guitar solo, people will stand there in awe, like what the fuck, like unexpected, not expecting, because I mean guitar solos aren't really, it's just not what you're.
I have to prevent myself from staring at him.
Right?
I'm just like,
right? Okay, I'm glad I'm not alone.
Because I can. That's why I say sometimes I'm too close to my bands to know whether it's good or whether it's popular or anything like that. And I'm not saying it to be cool. I'm just saying I just don't really think about those terms. Right, half the time, I want to turn around and watch the band play because yeah. they're usually so much better than I am. I've been very, very fortunate and lucky to be in the bands I've been in. I just sort of sweet talk people into letting me get there and yell. I mean, just.
Yeah,
it is what it is, you know. But yeah, this band.
I think you're really good, by the way.
Like, yeah, I agree.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. You're welcome. I'm still not giving you a reach around. You know, I don't know. I'm feel not like I'm rambling now. At least. Sorry, no, because there's not enough Kleenex in the world for that.
So the Persistent Aggressor.
I mean, you could honestly call that band like a post big band hardcore. And that's accurate.
That right? Sounds. You say post big band hardcore. It sounds like Brian Setzer's playing with.
Yeah,
us.
I'm just saying. It's post big band, and it's hardcore.
I like the big sound. I always felt that people who feel that punk musicians can't be good musicians and or can't have good production, I always felt that was short sighted.
Yeah.
If you go back and you listen to like the earliest rumblings of punk records, like Television's Marquee Moon. That record is impeccable as far as production goes, and the guitar playing on it is fucking beautiful. It's like, that's a record I say anybody, metal, hardcore, punk, whatever you're fucking into, go listen to Television's Marquee Moon, and you'll hear some fucking shit that you think you're hearing is brand new now that they've been stealing from this band that was around in 1973. I mean, they're just fucking astonishing.
This is one of my favorite things about you. You have to be the music guy in any circle that you're in, because throughout the show... How many bands have you heard that you're like, I have to Google the fuck out of this now.
I have no idea who they are, yeah.
But like, you know what? But that's just it. I'm a very lazy music listener. That's what, I'm always looking backwards, so I missed out on so much stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I just recently started listening to fucking Roxy music. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why was I not listening to those first two Roxy music records, you know?
Right. And he's somebody who's been buying records since he was a kid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's an impressive amount of knowledge that you have.
It's because I didn't get laid in high school.
Well, yeah.
I wasn't talking to girls.
I'm a fucking retard.
I was in my room scouring liner notes and reading shit, and, you know, between wrestling and, you know, fucking music, I'm just like, ooh, you know, I mean, so you kind of get that.
So you DJ. You DJ from time to time.
I don't call it DJ. I play records. Well,
okay, okay. You play records.
I don't want to offend my real DJ friends, Forrest Get 'em Gump, who's fucking amazing. I play records with my buddy Matt Feeney. That guy is a fucking fountain of musical knowledge. That dude is a motherfucker. You should talk to about punk rock. That guy knows his fucking shit.
That doesn't surprise
couple,
me.
He's a couple years behind me. He's got inordinate amounts of cash to spend on records, apparently, because every time we play records together, have you heard this single? No, I haven't, Matt. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But we do it like once a month at the matinee. It used to be more of a loose thing where we would call the week before and say, can we come in on Friday? And Annie or Wes, whoever would, yeah, come on in. And then Annie kind of took over and she says, I want to nail you guys down more further ahead of time. So we play records, and usually it's just an excuse for me to get out of the house, play my records to my friends, and usually Matt and I just sit up there and talk like fucking nerds. Sometimes people come out, sometimes they don't. They're not coming to see us because there's no following. I'm not DJ Larry and DJ Matt, but right. You know, he did the punk night at Annabelle's, and that's how I kind of hooked up with him, because during the summer when I'm not teaching, he would say, hey, come bring some of your records. So I'll bring some hardcore records, and I said, I'm doing this thing at the matinee. So we actually took it on the road. We went to Columbus one time.
Nice.
Guitar player for Splinter, Bob, owns a couple of bars down there. He said, come on down, bring your records, Larry. So we went down there and...
played records and bullshit about music.
Yeah, do you guys know Jason Terulli?
I don't.
He was in Tight Whips, and he's a sound guy of some renown now. He's done tours with... he was most recently out with I can't remember her fucking name. She's a Canadian singer, but he was out with Social Distortion for a long time doing her front of house sound. Mm. He took a Black Keys gig. He got a start with them and then quit working with them. And then he just needed a gig to keep busy. So he's out with them now doing their sound, but he'll DJ with us a lot too. Yeah. So it's just nerds. We're not
just doing music. Yeah. So yeah. I was going to say, cause like, you spend all different kinds. It's not like, oh, Larry's coming up. It's just going to be,
the only time I ever play my hardcore and punk records, like a lot, like strictly punk, is when I do Punk Night Matt. Usually when we do the matinee thing, we'll go into some deep fucking Al Green shit.
Oh, nice.
I'll play fucking Maxwell and Erykah Badu if I fucking feel like it, you know, because that's, we like to sort of weave in and out of sounds. Like, he'll play five songs, I'm like, oh, you're going to set me up for that, then I have to like go that way, come out of that hole, and then come up with something else, but, and then set him up for something. It is really that nerdy. We do actually sit and think about it.
That is.
Not beforehand, but that night, like, I'm listening, because we're listening to each other's records, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of power pop, a lot of garage rock, a lot of, you know, early 60s stuff like the Stones and the Animals, them, Captain Beefheart, just whatever we feel like playing. Nice. So
there's no difference in nerds. Like, that's your guys' D&D room.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And same thing with jocks. Like, they're just fucking sports nerds.
Yeah.
They sit around and fucking talk about their baseball players and their fucking stats and shit. Nerds aren't different from other nerds. You just like different things.
Yep. That's the way I see it.
Man, like, I've always wanted to do that, just like, I've gotten to the point to where I don't have anybody to listen to music with, and whenever I find something new, like, I want to go play it for somebody, and, like, I can't tell you how many times, like, I'll play a song for one of my friends where I'm like, you got to hear this, and 20 seconds into the song, they just start talking over it.
Yes! Oh, my God! It's like one of the most annoying things ever. You're like, I specifically, or you're like,
no, there's this fucking part coming up!
Fucking song!
I thought of you! Fucking listen to this thing! And there's been so many times where I'm like, man, if I could fucking just...
There's been so many times where, like, that's happened, and I'm like, you have no respect for me. You don't respect me as a person, and you're disrespecting me right now by fucking running your mouth.
I think I've lost friendships because of it.
I don't want to hear about your day!
That sounds like a personal problem, man.
What?
Like, what you just said,
it's
sounds like...
personal.
What you just said sounds like something you might say to a lover. I'm just saying. Well,
I got some issues
going
on.
But you're not wrong. So many times
I've been like, man, I would love to be able to just go play records at a cool fucking at a cool little place and just play the kind of music that I think people should listen to. But like, different, it'd be different from you because, like, nobody really wants to listen to the shit that I probably
nobody wants to listen to our shit either. We just show up.
You just show up and do
it. Well, I mean, because, like I said, it's just like, yeah, we put Facebook, we don't put flyers up. And
right. There
are plenty of times where we're playing something, people just fucking leave.
Oh, there's plenty of times, I'm sure.
And it's like, you know, all those people are like a full fucking 20 years younger than me, if not more.
Right.
I'm old enough to be some of those people's dad, you know? But it's, like I said, it's about entertaining ourselves. The bartenders like us,
yeah.
You know, and we're just kind of hanging out and doing that thing. And if we get a good crowd and people have actually danced, then that's better. If I turn somebody on something, that's cool. But the thankless part of it is the motherfucker comes up and asks me to play fucking Billie Eilish.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, okay. I was going to ask and they're if not, you get the and request.
Well, there's nothing wrong with her. I don't know anything about her, but that's like a name, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you see these crates of records, right?
Yeah.
I don't have that. Well, why don't you have it? Because I brought a crate of records. I'm not fucking playing this from a laptop. You know, I can only carry so much stuff. And also, it tells me that they're not paying attention to what we're playing. Because right. I'll be playing fucking Baby Huey and the Babysitters, and they come up and ask me for fucking Cardi B. I'm like, where in this thread do you think I'm going to fit that in, even if I fucking had it?
Right.
Even if I wanted to play it.
Why don't you request the Zombies or something?
You're like the parking lot DJ off the movie The Goods.
Hey, DJ! Place is about to pop. Why don't you throw on some Charlie Daniels?
Good call. You know I love it. Girl, won't you let me touch it? Put him in my face. Bounce him to the base. Nobody tells DJ Request what to play. Let them tell you what to play. They lose respect for you. They lose respect for you. You lose control. Not today.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be a music snob. I'm just like, just think about what you're saying before you come up and do this.
Right.
Because I'm like, I'm probably not going to have it. It's actually hard work
because
you're thinking three steps ahead. You're trying to make sure you're getting your cues and stuff. I can't imagine how Forrest does it. He actually does real DJing, like real fucking scratching and cutting and it's hard enough to do that. I can only imagine how his mind must fucking explode when somebody comes up to ask him to play a fucking current tune, you know? And, man, there are other bars, man, that got jukeboxes. Go put your credit card in one of those.
Yeah, you're definitely going to have the people that come in that are like, so no jukebox tonight?
Yeah.
Can't put my dollars in? Yeah.
A guy asked me one time, I was playing something, comes up and he goes, "You got any Morbid Angel?" I'm like, "No, not tonight." Fucking Christ. You're wearing a Voivod shirt, so I thought you might like them. I do, but I didn't bring them tonight.
Right. Morbid Angel is awesome.
Yeah. Well, the first record is.
I thought Gateways to Annihilation was pretty fucking awesome.
Pretty sick.
It's pretty good. Pretty good shit. Yeah, I would imagine, I would think that like the most satisfying thing is being able to introduce somebody to something that they've never heard before. And
usually it's Matt. Nobody in a bar cares.
Yeah.
Usually he turns me on to something, which is great. That's what I get. And just hanging out with him. He's such a nice dude. And he's funny as fuck. And, you know, when he and Jason, when all three of us get to do it together, it's pretty fun. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, so. It is an awesome thing, though, to turn people on to shit that you like that they've never heard and they enjoy it as well. That's why you sit your friends down and say, hey, listen to this.
That's kind of why we podcast. Like, part of the reason why we do this is, like, I love playing bands that nobody's ever heard. Like, last week, like, Blood Tusk. I've had a few people this week hit me up being like, yo, that shit was incredible.
Legit.
They've got a show coming up with somebody. Child Bite or something? Or oh, no. They're going on tour, Child Bite.
Right. Blood Tusk is?
Yep. No, yes.
Nice.
Blood Tusk.
Don't ask me how I know that.
I heard Child Bite killed it at fucking Boca.
They were really fucking good. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you guys do a great job of like talking about new bands, especially current local ones. Like, I feel like a fossil. I've been going over like my bullshit history and talking about old stuff. Oh, but
so not bullshit. It's such a relevant history to what you have done, the catalog that you have produced. I don't care how you feel about yourself. It's about how we feel about you.
Okay, that's fine. But what I'm saying is, I like what you guys talk about current bands, and that's fucking super important. Like, Wall Creeper. I mean, and right now, not just heavier music, greater Akron area is fucking a fertile ground for bands. I mean, we just talk about two bands that fucking Jeff falls in. He's in two bands, you know? I mean, so there's two bands, Foul Spirits, Radian, Wall Creeper, Actual Form. The Beyonderers. My buddy Wes is in a great band called White Lighter. Yeah. They're fucking good.
I saw them play at Square Records.
High Wraith.
Oh, fucking High Wraith. Amistad.
Then there's us. Goost. You know, I mean, there's a million fucking bands. We could go on forever and ever, and I like what you guys do. That's why I always like the podcast. And I've known Grant for a long time, so it's kind of hard not to.
Yeah.
Try to figure out what Grant was doing. Took me a couple times to sort of figure out what he was doing in the podcast.
But this has been awesome going over a lot of the history of it, because like we were kind of discussing before we were podcasting, kind of talking about like the old generation meets the new generation. Do you feel like there's a certain, do you feel like you have a responsibility to help put younger bands over, or
I don't feel like, or
do you want to like help them? Or
I don't have a responsibility to it. I mean, ultimately, it's up to them to do what they want to do. I just want to do it because if I like a band, I like a band.
Yeah.
And if they're my friends, they're my friends. You know, so I'm willing to do it. I'm not into scene building necessarily.
Right.
But if I'm buddies with a guy and I dig their band, we're going to do a show. And that's the only problem with that line of thinking is that, you know, I skew a little bit older, but it's not too far-fetched to say that a lot of bands we play with are closer to my age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guys in Wall Creeper are a bit younger, but they're not, Sean's not a spring chicken. He's in his 30s, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Right. So, I mean, you know, as far as in their 20s, I don't know how much reach or interest those people have in what we're doing.
Yeah.
But if some young guy approached me and said, hey, I like your band, let's do a show, let's do it. I'm not trying to, you know, the divide exists just because that's how it is with young people. And I said young people. Jesus young Christ. People.
We're old people.
Yeah, but think, okay. Yeah, I mean, think about it. When we were in our fucking 20s, did we give a fuck what a 40-year-old was saying?
No.
We talked so much shit about 40-year-olds.
Man. Yeah. I walked into a mall for the first time a couple weeks ago. And Maria was playing in this little play area while my wife was shopping for something. And these kids come walking down the mall, and they're wearing whatever current band shirt it was. And they took one look at me, right? And the disgust and revulsion in their face of, like, this fucking normie square was...
They have no clue.
Was... No, it wasn't that. It made me happy. Because that's what you should do as a young person. You need to push back a little bit. And I laugh because I'm like, yeah, that was me in my teens and 20s, totally. Man. And you know, maybe not to that extent, but, mm-hmm. you know, you need to push back because you're trying to find yourself and find your own way. Yeah, so for a young person to reach out to me or my band, that's not going to happen as frequently, but I'm definitely not opposed to it. I'll play with anybody as long as they're fucking decent people and they're not shitheads and... Because, again, I know some people can divorce personal feelings and political feelings over a band. You know, when I came up, you didn't divorce that shit. People, you were either a decent fucking person or you weren't. And I'm not dealing with people who aren't decent. And age isn't an issue for me, or even style of music. If they really want to take a chance, if they're a fucking northern soul band like, you know, Art Blakey and the Affections, if Bob Bassone came to me and said, hey, do you want to play a show with us? I'd say yes in a second. It would go over like a lead balloon, but I'd do it. Right. You know, I mean, people would be dancing, having a good time. Then we'd get up there and people would be mad as fuck. But so, like, if a younger band came wanted to play, yeah, I'd do it. I don't have a responsibility to anything but myself and my own bands. You know, I take ownership of what we do and how we do our business, how we conduct ourselves. If that affects somebody else one way or the other, then that's just how it works. Because I'm not so arrogant to think that what I do matters in the big picture of things. We're one band in a million fucking bands in a giant fucking, you know, ocean of bands and shit.
Right.
You know, but if somebody else sees, well, that's how you should do it, then great, you know. DIY or die.
I love Persistent Aggressor, dude, and I miss Don Austin.
I don't.
I do.
Those days.
I miss Spindler being around.
I do miss Sean, and I see Clint a lot because he has a kid my daughter's age, so we see each other all the time. I see Stangelo around, and clearly I see Josh all the time, but I miss that part of it. I don't miss that band. I don't miss being in that band, but...
How much fun are you having with Persistent Aggressor right now?
It's a lot of fun. It's light work, and I'm probably saying something I probably shouldn't say out loud, but I think we're kind of on a bit of a hiatus until spring. Mm. We have a lot of other commitments right now, so we're just going to write a ton of shit.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's awesome.
Get that taken care of, which is kind of weird because we just got that LP out. And
the album is phenomenal.
Thank you.
I'm not blowing smoke, and I'm not just saying that because you...
Do you know how embarrassing and uncomfortable I am right
good.
Now?
Good, good. It's about time. The tables have turned on Larry.
Yeah.
It is a phenomenal fucking album. Man, and I highly recommend it. We've been recommending it. I mean, you guys are one of the handful of bands that I think we mention every podcast. Like, there's like the You and the Sweaty Mammoths.
Three or four.
Yeah.
Like, three or four, you know, I listened to Sweaty Mammoth on your guys' recommendation. They're fucking great.
They're so good.
I like
good.
Them a lot.
They're really good.
And it was writing. Funny, the guys in Contra were pushing them when I was in the band. I just never got around to listening to them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm slow. I like I said, I'm always looking backwards. So I checked them out, and I'm like, fucking, they're great.
Those kids
Wall
are wonderful.
Wall Creeper is just, they're great. They're exactly what I want in a hardcore band.
Mm-hmm.
Just nasty and mean.
Yeah.
Guitar player giving you the fucking finger the whole time.
The whole time.
I'm like, that's tight. You know,
Don Austin. I mean, that's the comparison Jeff Fall put on it.
Maybe.
I was just like,
I think Wall Creeper's a better band, but.
Well, they had, you know, higher templates than what you guys did. Like, they got to start off with bands that probably sounded like You. And so you guys had the bands before you to learn from. So, you know, it's just an evolution of it, really.
Yeah.
I don't want to say Wall Creeper's better than Don Austin, but, I mean, Wall
I
Creeper's,
will.
Yeah, Wall
I'll
Creeper's better than, they're better than Don Austin.
Wall Creeper's better than most bands.
They really are.
They're
the
great.
First, they're one of those bands, the first time I saw them, I talked about it on the show. It was a spiritual experience. I was just like,
Feds is another local band I fucking love who don't
love
play
it.
Out Fed, nearly
Feds
enough.
Is
Frank
dude.
Is my favorite front man because he's absolutely fucking hysterical. He's got a swagger to what he does that is just, like, absurd. If the shadow's up,
Well, he's got a...
He gets away with it. He does shit that, like, if I did that, people are like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Frank does is like, oh, that's dope.
Frank's kind of an Frank's kind of an imposing guy.
Nah, he's a sweetheart.
Oh, absolutely. If you know Frank, he's an absolute sweetheart. But to see Frank, if your first impression of Frank was seeing the feds live and watching him fucking sing, you're going to be terrified of that guy. You're going to be like, I don't want to fuck with that dude. He's an absolute sweetheart.
He's got a great vocal. He's a really good fucking drummer. Drummer. He's got
solid as fuck.
He and I, well, when I talk about drumming, he does some of my favorite drumming stuff. Like, he has a great fucking shuffle off his snare that's fucking sweet. I love that because it goes back to my blues leanings. Like, nah, it's tight. I'm keeping you guys. I'm sorry.
Feds.
They're not, though. No.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, when Frank played with The Unclean.
Oh, yeah.
It was fucking great.
Oh, I forgot he was an Unclean.
Yeah, great.
Was it Rue or not the Rue? Burns.
It was Mike Burns and Matt Bremkamp, who like started Sofa King Killer back in the day. Mm-hmm. He was in the original Sofa King.
And Frank.
Yeah, Frank playing drums.
Okay, so Matt was the dude when I saw the Unclean at the Blackout Cookout. I went outside and I was saying something that had nothing to do with the show at all. But I was just like, yeah, it was kind of garbage. And he, like, walked by me. And he's like, yeah, fuck that band, right? Fuck this show. Just, like, went off on me. Like, thought I was making it. And I was just like, okay, dude.
He and Frank, I don't know if they still do it, but they used to go out. They would pick up gigs doing country
right?
shit.
Yeah.
And Frank, like, is just, he can do both styles. Like, his drumming. You know, Brandon in Cheap Heat and Feds, like, sometimes I see Brandon do things that I see Frank do too. Like, yeah. Brandon has a real nice drum style that I appreciate a lot too, you know. Really, this is gonna sound really music critic like, but really tasteful, like just shit that's really nice, you know, that real in pocket kind of stuff.
Yeah,
which is good. I mean, drummers could take a fucking page out of the Phil Rudd playbook and not hit a crash in every fucking downbeat once in a while.
I love Brandon as a drummer and as a person, and I still want to do the Judgment Night soundtrack cover band with Brandon.
Oh, he's all
we've been talking about that forever.
Really?
Yeah. I want like the movie playing in the background too. I want to do the entire have a band that does the entire album, but it'd be like 50 people because, you know, not everybody can be real.
Who's all on that soundtrack?
Fucking Slayer and Ice-T, Onyx and Biohazard.
Helmet.
House of Pain. Yeah. The album that changed everything forever.
Tool. And who else is from that era that was on that soundtrack? Every fucking band.
Speaking of
from
Tool.
That era.
Are you a Tool fan?
Oh, yeah, we got to know. Is Larry a Tool fan?
We know how much you're into Pantera.
I'm so excited about that.
Okay, so again, like, Josh, I gave Josh a bunch of shit, mm-hmm. our guitar player, because he loves them. And he loves to call me a hater. And what he and many of my detractors fail to realize is that I will find something fucking good to say about a band.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say something very fucking good about Tool right now. Mm. When they came out, there was nobody else that sounded like them. I thought visually, although somebody told me they stole this shit, but visually their videos were pretty fucking impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I loved those. They can play the shit out of their instruments. The guy can clearly sing, right? But for my taste, they can't write a fucking song to save their fucking lives.
Bro.
It's self-indulgent pap. It's all like, hey, watch me jerk off my guitar for 14 minutes. I could give a fuck. So objectively, if you're looking at them in array of any kind of band you want, they're a good band. They can play, right?
Mm.
You know, but it goes back to my whole thing. I'll take the fucking Ramones of a Rush any day. Yeah. And Tool is basically Rush for Juggalos. It's fucking, I fucking hate it. I fucking hate it. I absolutely fucking hate that band. However, they're not nearly as bad as post Peter Green Fleetwood Mac, but that's a whole other fucking story. I mean, you know, I'd rather listen to Maynard James Keenan. What's his fucking name? Billy Bob James what?
James Keenan.
Right. From Ravenna, right? He's from Ravenna. Okay, that's his fault. he fucking, I would, you know, that guy, he clearly loves the smell of his own farts. I mean, he's just like so impressed by himself. That makes it even worse. And Tool fans, not all of them, oh, a great portion of them, when you scoff at Tool,
yeah,
there's the idea that, oh, you can't possibly like good music then.
Right.
Oh yeah. You know,
and I'm like, oh, yeah. So am I wrong?
That, like, and I'm on a level. I know you don't understand. Your right. little brain.
You can't possibly understand.
Can't that. Oh yeah.
Rush fans aren't even that bad.
That band is just too complex for your brain.
No. You know. And so I mean, you know, they're a good band. They just don't write anything I could give a fuck about. It's self-indulgent and bores me to fucking tears.
Now we know.
Bores me to tears.
Now we know.
You know? But, I mean, yeah. I mean, the only thing... Well, there's plenty of things more reprehensible than Tool. But, I mean, I mentioned post-Peter Green Fleetwood Mac. That stuff's abominable. There's, like, so much stuff from that era. It's just bad. Fucking Aerosmith can fucking take a flying leap. That's a band with all this...
I've never liked that band.
They have all... Fuck that band, you know, right? they had all this untapped potential. Steven Tyler used to be able to sing well. Joe Perry can clearly play guitar. The band is clearly tight. They have one fucking song I like. One fucking song. And guess what? I like the Testament cover better than the original. That's pretty sad.
Oh, it's bad when you like any cover better than the original.
It's rare. There are a couple times where I like a cover better than the original. I always, like... Metallica clearly turned me on to Diamond Head. I was unaware of Diamond Head till like Metallica was covering them. Their covers of Helpless and The Prince are fucking astonishingly good. The Diamond Head originals are fucking amazing, but I like the Metallica ones a little bit better. They edge them out by hair. There's a little more oomph. Production's just more my speed, you know? But generally speaking, a cover's usually way worse than the original, almost always. But the Testament one is also, they do a cover of Nobody's Fault, which is on Rocks, that Aerosmith Records Rocks.
Okay, yeah.
It's a B-side. And Testament does an amazing version of it. And then when I went back and listened to the Aerosmith one, because I had decided prior to that I could give a fuck about Aerosmith. But I'm like, oh, I like this song. So I went back and listened to that. And I'm like, well, that one's not bad. You know, I mean, they're just wasted potential. I mean, dude... Again, another person who loves the smell of his own farts. All of his songs are about his dick.
Yeah.
And I just don't give a shit.
God, I hate that band.
You know.
I do not like him.
The only band that should be writing songs about their dicks are the Rolling Stones. And they stopped in the mid-70s writing good songs about dicks. I have plenty of dick songs to choose from with their catalog alone.
Dude, like, Typo Negative, like he was, that singer from that band was in Playgirl. Didn't write songs about his dicks.
Yeah.
No.
You know what I mean?
Respectful.
No, that's not true.
No, they didn't really write songs about that. They wrote really. Songs about, like, fucking women. Well, but they didn't really go, my dick!
Nah, they didn't.
I like that right. woman just walked by the car with the windows down, and you were just like, my dick! Paul Stanley wrote Love Gun. That's about his dick,
That's
right?
totally about his dick.
That's totally about his dick. Lick it up.
You know, that's the only era of Kiss I kind of ironically enjoy, is when they took off the makeup, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
In actuality, they were probably wearing more makeup during that time period than before.
Yeah.
To make themselves look like they were 15 again.
That's my favorite.
But like,
this era.
Lick It Up and Heaven's on Fire are absurd songs.
God
like,
gave rock and roll to you?
They're bad on every level, but it's like that sort. It's like a sore tooth. You keep, ow, you keep touching it,
you keep
ow,
touching it
ow.
Anyway.
Yeah, but Kiss is another band I can't fucking stand.
No.
And that is blasphemy for a lot of my friends. A lot of my friends are like, what the
well,
fuck
yeah,
is wrong
they're,
with
they're,
you? Like, nah.
They're, you're either super pro or you're super against it. You know, my stepdad explained to me when I was a little kid, I grew up just loving Kiss. And he told me, he goes, you know, in the 70s, he's like, because he listened to like Zeppelin and, you know, what was cool. I might, dude. Nah. Like, we can do a whole nother fucking podcast on the shit you hate. That would be so.
I don't hate Zeppelin, but there's like a whole thing behind it.
But he told me, he said, you know, Kiss was for kids. It was like they were just like lunchbox music. Like, if you liked real rock and roll, you did not like Kiss.
You could argue that the first couple records weren't lunchbox music. They were trying to really sort of capitalize on the groundwork that.
Like New York Dolls.
Well, the New York Dolls and Alice Cooper, primarily. Were capitalizing on. The difference was they took the amateurism of the New York Dolls but didn't have the swagger or rock and roll chops that they had, and they definitely didn't have the musicality of the Alice Cooper Band. That first lineup, the Alice Cooper Band, those first five or six records, people just think about the heads getting cut off and shit, but go listen to those records, man. There's fucking amazing guitar playing. The drumming is ridiculous. That was a fucking great band. Two of those guys are born in Akron.
Huh.
I think Michael Buxton, or Glenn Buxton and, I can't remember all the name. Glenn Buxton and Michael something, they were born in Akron. But they were just, everything about those Alice Cooper records, just a lot of depth there that people don't give them credit for. Amazing fucking band.
Love Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
In 1980s Kiss. Just gotta say, I love
that. I like all Kiss. I mean, I don't hate Kiss.
Nah.
I don't listen to Kiss.
Nah.
But I don't hate it. If it comes on, I'm like, ooh, Kiss.
I always have to point out that there was not one Gene Simmons sang song in the 1980s, like after they took the makeup off, that was a hit. Not one. They were all Paul Stanley songs.
Well, he kind of, from what I've read, he took over the band kind of. Like, he sort of was, like, carrying the band business-wise because Gene was trying to make movies. That's what I read. I don't know how true it is, but I mean...
That makes a lot of sense.
Gene made that movie with Tom Selleck and
the Runaway.
The robotic spiders and shit that fucking injected acid into you.
Dude, yeah!
I fucking love that shit. Gene didn't do shit in that movie. He didn't act at all. He was just Gene. Yeah. He was literally just like, oh, I got spiders.
And you know what's funny? If you listen to Clutch Elephant Riders, there are some times where Neil Fallon sounds like Gene Simmons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah!
That, good God almighty. Like, that sort of thing that he does. It's like... That's Gene Simmons. You know, that's kind of
it's pretty
the
awesome.
First thing I noticed. When
I mean, Kiss was household for all of us. It was a household name for all of us.
That is true.
We grew up with that.
And right? Again, I'll say something good about them. There are two songs I think are absolutely fantastic because they're absurd and stupid. And they kind of did it the right way. They own everything of theirs. They weren't playing around. If you're going for it, man, fucking make it happen. If that's what your plan is, just go do that, you know? And, you know.
Yeah, people make fun of him for, like, Gene, you know, making Kiss everything. Kiss, you know,
pencils, post-it notes. It is ridiculous.
Right.
But if you can capitalize off of your shit and make $150 million off of fucking coasters, do it.
Because it's not like they didn't work for that. They worked hard for that. That doesn't come just by magic. It's just that, you know, once you get to a certain point, you have to ask, well, how much money do you really need? But then the other question
Gene's
is like
all of it.
He's like, I'm going to find out. I'm going to see. Yeah. I'll let you know when I reach the breaking point.
I need all the money
point.
And all of the women.
Yeah. Give him the Paul.
Well, he's got them all in his bed.
He does.
I'll take all the Pauls because he's really with guys backstage.
You think?
I just like saying it because it really, really gets Eric's goat.
It's okay. I don't care. Paul can do whatever he wants. Yeah, whoever he wants. However he wants.
You shouldn't care.
He's Paul fucking Stanley.
You shouldn't care. He's more of a stud, a stallion.
Yeah.
He can have whatever he wants.
Anything that he wants. I mean, if he was like, hey,
guys,
Eagles. Hey,
girls,
Eagles.
Woodland animals.
Jump on this. I'd be like, all right, Star Child. Let's fucking, let's get this shit.
You'd spit on it.
Yeah. I wouldn't even ask my wife for permission. It would be I'm asking for forgiveness. It's just way easier.
Would you still sleep with him if he made you listen to songs from The Elder during sex?
Oh, no. No, that would be the fucking, that is, you had to make that album reference. No, no, that's the one. That's my cutoff.
Is the songs from The Elder music from The Elder?
It's music from,
okay,
music from The Elder.
That record.
Yeah, no.
Which even.
That's the deal breaker with Paul.
Killing your boner?
You know that's his
making... It would totally kill my boner.
You know that's his making love jam, and that's why he's never married. He's trying to find the girl. The girl that can still love him after listening to that record is the one he'll finally marry.
Yeah.
It's a test.
And you're single.
Well, shit, we should have you on again, man. We got like an hour and a half.
That's
a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Especially for like an hour-long podcast.
We got 6 o'clock, and it's right
I'm a fucking verbose dude. I'm sorry, guys.
No, it was. Awesome. We've been wanting you on the show forever. Thank you so much for coming out, hanging out in the car.
Thanks for coming out.
I love Grant. I've known him for years. You're a pretty good guy.
Yeah,
you know, you're all right.
Nah, I'm not.
It's always good seeing you, man.
Sometimes just a little bit of hot sauce and blue cheese helps me you know, a little bit of flavor off you.
Yeah.
Because you need it.
I do.
I'm just kidding. But Grant's a good guy, and I just, you know, I don't get to do this very often, so.
Man, it was awesome.
Thanks.
It was awesome.
Thanks.
Get that Persistent Aggressor album.
Yeah, pick that up.
Do it.
Get our Bandcamp.
Bandcamp?
That's yeah, you can order it from Bandcamp. It's on all the big
stream. You got it on vinyl and CD?
Just vinyl.
Just vinyl.
Or whatever streaming platform you can stream it on off from. But we'd prefer you buy the record, because then we can take the record and make more records. So that's the idea.
Highly recommend you go out and pick up the album. I listen to it at work when I'm driving. I drive all day, so.
I've listened to it twice.
Just twice? I've listened to it twice this week. I listened to it on the way here.
I listened to it four times all the way through.
Well, I mean, I listened to it to check to make sure the sequencing of the songs was correct, and at that time I wasn't really listening to the songs. I just listened to hear the spaces between. And then I didn't listen to it for a while because I didn't have my record yet, and I didn't have the test press except for to listen to the sequence. And then when I finally got the records, I just wasn't interested in listening to my own songs. So
well, you're not Fred Durst. So.
Well, I mean, you know, it's like.
Well, that's how I am with the editor on the podcast. Like, I have to do so much like listening when I'm doing the edits that by the time that I actually put it up, like I'm done.
I listen to it once.
You guys get a good sound.
Thank you.
Comparably, because I listen to a lot of podcasts, I'm really astonished at how good it
almost
sounds.
Every one of our podcasts have sounded phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard some dingy ass sounding fucking podcasts, man. It's ridiculous. So,
yeah, I cheat. I do a little. I got a few tricks.
Yep.
In this machine, this amazing machine.
Well, speaking of tricks, I'll see you, Eric.
Yeah.
You trick ass trick. Trickity ass trick.
You have a favorite song from the Persistent Aggressor album that you want me to play here to end the show off? Because, like, I'm always just picking random songs.
Yeah, you pick it.
You pick the song.
I'll pick it, and I have to tell you why. I would go with Less Than, because there's a break where John does this this drum break that I think is my favorite part of the entire record, and it goes back to us talking about how I like shuffles.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to it, John does this really fucking sweet, like, unexpected thing that most drummers just bash through those parts, and John just does this sweet little thing. It's my favorite song.
Well, hell yeah.
Because of that one spot. Everything else about the song is great, but, like, that's the thing. That's what...
It does it for you.
If I could... If I was forced to listen to my record, I'd be like, can I just listen to that 10 seconds on loop? Because that's the only part I want
to
hear.
So, like, when you listen to the song, that part comes on, you're like, hey. You do a little...
Yeah, I get a little bit happy. Well, usually live, because like I said, I've only listened to it a couple times.
Yeah.
I don't make a point to listen to it.
You should listen to your stuff more often.
That's what you got us for. We listen to it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We're gonna have you, the listener, listen to it now, as we're about to sign off. Until next time, thank you again, Larry. Anytime. I would love to have you come on and just talk about shit that we hate.
Oh, we're definitely going to have to do another one.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. 100%. If you want
to. Well,
let's
talk about things we like, too. I mean, I don't want to be a fucking...
It's not entertaining.
No. Be like a Dave Chappelle skit, a bunch of fucking haters standing around.
Yeah.
Let's not do that. I mean, well, okay, I mean, we can.
I mean, I don't know. The stuff you said about Tool was thoroughly entertaining.
Well, you know. Thoroughly entertaining. Hey, people like what they like. I like what I like. What are you going to do?
Hell yeah. Until next time, my name is Eagle.
River City Redbeard.
Say your name.
I'm Tim.
The Tool Man.
Tim the Tool Man.
Taylor.
From that one.
Your name's Eric.
That's for Eric Burgess coming out.
I'm has been a Lousy Weather Media Network production. Find new episodes and archives at lousyweathermedia.com.
Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.